influence is about knowing, when it comes to business, is knowing what your goal is, who your audience is, and who are influencing that audience regarding that goal.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super
you.
Welcome to today's Super You podcast. I'm your host, Eric Qualm. Most of you know me as Equal Man. I am super excited to have my good friend, Amanda Russell, on today. Just so you have some background on Amanda, I'm going to read it here. But Amanda is an international brand strategist, speaker, professor, and entrepreneur who has been at the forefront of digital marketing and social media revolution from its infancy. Amanda created UCLA's influencer marketing curriculum, the world's first fully accredited program in influencer marketing. She currently teaches the program, along with marketing, branding, and business strategy at some of the world's premier universities, including Hook'em Horns, University of Texas, and Harvard. I've heard of Harvard. She advises several of the top companies in the world on marketing and how they interact with their customers. Her new book, which we're going to go in depth on today, and I'm super excited about, The Influencer Code, became an immediate Amazon bestseller, known for teaching brands how to use collaboration to grow and scale their business. The Toronto Star calls her the real-life Iron Woman, and hopefully we can unpack some of her athletic background as well, and the ultimate go-getter. Amanda is a master in helping us all better understand what influence is, and more importantly, what it is not, how to collaborate more effectively with influencers, and how to use influencer marketing to build our brands and grow our business. Amanda, super excited to see you and hear you. Welcome to the Super You podcast.
Same. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Eric.
No, it's awesome. So I always like to ask people comic book origin story, you know, just give us a little more background, a little flavor of how you've got where you are today.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I come from actually from Canada, and I didn't start out to be in marketing, and I definitely never saw myself starting my own business. I like structure a lot, and so starting your own business sounded very unstructured. Running was my opening to come to the US, and it also became the platform from which I got into what I'm doing now, such that I was injured. I had a career-ending injury before the 2008 Olympics, and that kind of derailed me on many levels. And at the time, you know, I hear a lot of podcasts ask, "What was your biggest failure?" And you know, my mind goes directly to that. That to me was at the time a failure on an epic level. And you know, you feel like you had done. You're so confident in your identity and what you're doing, and you know the goal, and you know all the metrics, and then all of a sudden it was just gone, and I didn't know what I would do next, and especially going from a level where you've got all these people around you and you're on this pedestal, and then they're not there, and you're nobody, and I had no experience doing anything else, so that was like a turning point. And where I really had to figure out, okay, what do I have to offer? I'm not dead. And I have all this energy, and I know I have work ethic, and I know I have drive. So where am I going to put that? And my dream from the moment the television was my favorite, my parents' favorite babysitter. And through it, I learned about the world. And that was, and I had this magical infatuation with New York City, especially through movies like Home Alone 2. And I thought, well, you know, if I can't go, I can't go home to Canada feeling like this failure. I'd rather be, and I've actually said this multiple times, but I'd rather be homeless in New York City than go back and have to live with my parents. And not because...
No offense, my parents.
Yeah, I know. And my mom heard me say that one time, and she was like, I got the wrath of God. She was like, they must think we're horrible. And I'm like, no, I have wonderful family. But it was the feeling of like, I've done all of this, I've come so far to have to go back and live in my small town in the middle of nowhere in Canada after all of this, just felt like like I said, I would rather be anonymous and homeless in a city where no one knew me. And so I went to New York. There was a lot of obstacles, namely that I was not American and had no work experience. But that became the platform for which I would then build my career. And I started with a consulting firm and went back to business school and used business school to start I called it a brand. And at the time, like, that didn't even really mean much. But it was at the forefront. It was kind of when YouTube was in its infancy. And I became fascinated with learning about certain people that were on this platform called YouTube that were developing these, like, literally cult-ish followings, and they weren't doing it. I remember thinking now it's so common, right? But I remember being just like, oh my God, these people, like, there's one in particular that I watched and I was like, he's doing nothing. Like, this is nothing. There's no content. It's so stupid. And yet people were just like, it was like he was Brad Pitt. And so I thought there's something that, and that was the idea that this community, right? And it didn't take anything. Like, I could go buy a flip cam and start my own channel. And so I did. And that was when it occurred to me, like, instead of developing, like, for a thesis project, instead of developing like a brand or a product and making a marketing plan around it, a business plan, a community, and then they tell me what they want.
You became an influencer to where you even sold that company, right?
Yes.
You became an influencer, and it was around, correct me if I'm wrong, but was it lifestyle? Was it fitness?
It was fitness. Yeah. Okay. It was fitness, and always fitness always becomes lifestyle. Yeah. I think, one of the first in the fitness space. We didn't use the term influencer. I still don't like the term influencer.
Let's unpack that. So I'm going to grab your book right here. So we've got the influencer code right here. So get it out, check it out. I love reading through it. I've got tons of highlights in here. One thing that jumped out at me was that I think you might even use the word hate. Like, you hate the word influencer. So let's get into that. So let's figure out, why did you write the book? And I think they might be one and the same. Like, why the book? Yeah. Why now? And then that might also unpack why you hate the term influencer.
And I think that it's not that I hate the term influencer. I hate that what people immediately think of. So, and you probably see this, if you walk into a room of like corporate executives and you tell them that you're here to talk about influencer marketing, and I ask them, okay, who here in the room is an influencer? Immediately they're going to like roll their eyes, snicker. Like, everyone's like, no, I'm sorry. I don't, it has this connotation of like vanity of posting selfies on social media platforms. And I think that's wrong. Influence is an outcome, not a job title. And so by nature, you can't be a fake influencer. And you also can't call yourself an influencer across categories, right? So in order for you to be an influencer, you have to have influence. And influence doesn't transfer categories. And it doesn't mean that if you're influential over one person, you're influential over all people. So by nature of that, to call somebody, to associate influencer with a social media content creator, they're not the same thing, but that's the association. We are all influencers, unless we live in a silo in which there's nobody in our lives. We are all at some point influential in somebody making a decision or taking an action. And we are all influenced in almost every single decision that we make. So it's so contextual and situational, but if we can, the reason I wrote the book is and teach this is because I think if we can reframe our minds to think about it differently, then it opens up an entire entire world of opportunity to scale yourself as a person and or your brand, because brands are people and people are brands.
No, that makes sense. And then when you look at it, are there some brands out there, or let's take a big step back, zoom out a little bit for our listeners out there, because they hear influencer, and it might be honestly the first time they've heard that word, but are there some influencers out there, like some names you could throw out there that we might know, to where like, oh, that person's considered an influencer? Like you said, everyone's an influencer, but they would be categorized as, okay, that's a YouTube influencer, that person's a TikTok influencer.
Yeah. And I it goes back to that, like, let's call them creators. But we can think of people like Kim Kardashian, like Pete, well, there's like a bunch on TikTok and Instagram. Off the top of my head, there's like Kelsey Wells and, any celebrity, I mean, anybody that's got a mainstream following, Charli D'Amelio, I think to name a few of them.
Well, like a video gamer like Ninja. Some people might have heard it. I'm not even a gamer, but yeah, I just know the name Ninja because he's like the Tiger Woods of this video gaming community.
Yeah, and there are so many. And those are just, to me, those are modern day celebrities, maybe. And so can they be influential? Of course. It's the same with a celebrity. Can a celebrity be an influencer? Yes. But does it mean that the two correlate? Not necessarily. You can be famous for being famous. You can be, you can be a social media content creator that gets a ton of interaction and engagement and following. But if you're not influential over anything, it doesn't matter. Or if you're influential in one category, let's say you influence girls and young girls in fashion, doesn't mean that you're going to be influential in somebody choosing a home builder. Like they just don't transfer. So I think that as a business, like influencer marketing can be so powerful, especially in the less glamorous categories, the less sexy products and services, and in the B2B space where you know your audience. Influence is about knowing, when it comes to business, is knowing what your goal is, who your audience is, and who are influencing that audience regarding that goal. So if you are a builder, who's your audience? Well, your audience is in Austin, Texas. Okay, and where are they going for their information to when they are choosing a builder? Then wherever they're going, whether they're people or places, those are the influencers.
Yeah. And then if, let's say I'm a brand, I'm a brand, or maybe I'm a small business, but I've got a decent amount of capital I want to deploy. I want to sell more product long-term. Obviously there's brand awareness, all that fun stuff that goes along with it. And I go, okay, I hear influencer marketing. I've got to do this. I sell baby products. I know there's these mommy influencers out there. Some of them call them rightly or wrongly mommy bloggers. And so I come to you. I'm like, Amanda, I've got X amount of budget. How do I find these mommy bloggers that'll help move the brand and move the product? Is there tools out there? Or how does that work?
There are tools. And a lot of them kind of reverse the process and are then going, again, you're going to social media content creators. So we go immediately to the social media content creators and like how the tools and algorithms to find these people. And that is one way, but that is something totally different. That is social media advertising. So you can use tools and algorithms to find mommy bloggers and to find any, you type in anything, but what's going to come up is the most commonly found people in that category, and they're probably getting bombarded with opportunities. Influencer marketing is about developing relationships with those who are really influencing your target audience. So if I'm a baby product, you know, based out of, I don't know, Toronto, then let's start with what is my goal? I want to create revenue of X number of dollars in year one, and then this amount in year two. Okay, well then how are we going to do it? Who's going to be our best audience? Well, our audience, let's say you break it down to two different primary and secondary audiences, and then studying that audience and taking the time up front to really uncover who is that audience and where are they going for their information. And that will by nature reveal who are the best influencers in that category. And oftentimes it's not the social media content creators. Is that great? Is that a great amplification for advertising? Absolutely. But is it a long-term strategy? Not usually. And it's usually more, we hear the exceptions to the rule than that being a long-term business strategy. It could be a spike and then it comes back down and it was a blip and it didn't go anywhere.
And then with these influencers, once you identify them, so you're like, okay, this is where they're getting their information. It's not from the top folks that have the million followers on Twitter. It is these three people seem to be, or more, but let's just, for argument's sake, example, these three moms seem to influence all these other moms and into action, which is what we want. At that point, do I pay those three people or how does that look? What does it look like? And it might be different for everything, but do I pay those people or how does that look?
Yeah, it's different for everybody. And I was having this conversation with a client earlier this week about actually very similar to like a mommy blogger style product. And I think, and they were like, okay, so how much should we allocate? And I think that some of the best, and who they identified, I'm like, you know, I think some of the best influencer relationships often don't involve any transactions. If celebrities and big names that had these followings, oftentimes to get in the door, maybe you have to pay for a promotion, but again, that's a promotion to start the relationship to see how you work together. But a long-term relationship is that's when you spend the time to find out, okay, so now you studied your audience. Now study what's important to that influencer. What are their motives? What are their goals? How can we have a mutually beneficial relationship? Because if we look at it more as a business partnership, then it becomes a more long-term mutually, both sides are really motivated to want it to work and to grow the brand, to reach the goals. So it could be that that person is, you know, you watch their, they are a YouTube person and they clearly have their videos produced and edited and they're in a studio. Maybe you have to allocate budget anyways, rather than paying them a one-off, offer to produce their, give them the space, offer to produce and film and edit for them. I know when I was doing the YouTube channel that it was the long-term partnerships that were astronomically the ones that stuck and the best for both sides.
No, that makes sense. And then when you look at it from a perspective of what are some of the companies that are doing it well, are there any companies that we can look to our audience to say, hey, these folks seem to be doing it well. This brand engages influencers the right way. And it's actually really dramatically helped their business.
Yeah, there are a lot. I mean, Lululemon is probably one of the first case studies of a brand using influencers. They call it ambassador programs, right? They're one and the same. They develop relationships with people that are influencing their community in the health and fitness space. One example, but that's also another very
And with Lululemon, are they providing these folks free product, free early releases? Are they also paying some of them? I mean, what does it look like?
They do not pay. No, okay. They don't. They've never paid a single, and they argue that they've never paid a single dime for marketing. But I think they give product and they support like a community. So they do it really well because it's not just about giving product for promotion, but they develop their relationship. They support their events. They give space for events, whether it's, you know, a nutritional tutorial or a Sunday morning yoga, and they're in all of their stores. And they do community runs. They have run clubs. They have all kinds of stuff. But that's a more obvious example. And not every brand is like a sexy fitness or yoga or fashion product. So an example I want to point to of a brand that I think hit it out of the park was Tractor Supply. And for those of you who don't know Tractor Supply, I learned about it when I moved to Texas. It's not just a Texas thing, but it's like the Walmart of feed and supply and home farming. And
Tractor Supply. This is new to me. This is good. I like it. Yeah. So they're like the big player.
Oh, you haven't heard? Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Well, welcome. I learned about them too, having moved here. Now you're going to see them everywhere and be like, oh, I can't believe I never knew about them. But they're huge. They're like Walmart of farming category. And can you imagine working for Tractor Supply in marketing and being tasked with having to increase sales in the home, like do-it-yourself farming category? Now, if you're looking to do marketing and influence, especially influencer marketing, it's not as simple as like finding an Instagram star to, talk about how you should create your own feed in your backyard. So what they did was super clever, and I would say they followed the code like to a T, but they studied their audience and they knew their audience really well. And they found that a large part of their home farming audience was in tune with this guy who named himself the Chicken Whisperer.
Okay, Chicken Whisperer, I'm with you. I like it.
Yeah, and his actual name, I think, is Andy Schneider. And Andy is just a regular, he was a regular dude that he started chicken farming in his backyard because his kids weren't sure, couldn't figure out where eggs could come from. So he started backyard chicken farming and he started documenting the process. And in doing so, he was getting some traction and, you know, people were asking about it. So he started a blog talk radio show. Now, Andy's blog talk radio show, they found out, was getting no joke. This is, I thought this was not real. His blog talk radio is Monday through Thursday noon to two hours a day, Monday through Thursday, of him talking about raising chickens in your backyard. And he gets a viewership on average of 20,000 viewers.
Nice. I love it. This is so good. I always talk about being niche, like Chicken Whisperer.
Right? Chicken Whisperer. And so, and then he wrote a book and, you know, kept. And so Tractor Supply found Chicken Whisperer And they offered him a partnership, and that they would, if he would come, he could promote his Blog Talk Radio, and he could promote his, sell his books. And at every one of their locations, he would come and do these seminars. Well, these seminars, they sell out. Like you can't get into them. They sell out so fast. And at every seminar, he not only does he sell, chicks at the end of the thing, he also sells all the paraphernalia that goes with it. So like the feed, the coops, the whatever the heck goes with chicken farming. And I think they average, again, I think it's like $20,000 to $30,000 for these little tiny little workshops at these local tractor supply stores every time Andy goes there to speak.
That's awesome.
And so the question is, who's your chicken whisperer, right?
They're having the chicken whisperer. So they've partnered with the chicken whisperer to come to the stores?
Yeah.
Okay. And then they film it. So they're kind of doing offline, online. They have them.
They don't film it actually. I don't think they film it. No, they just invite the local community and they pack these seminars.
Well, that's a good example because people immediately in my mind too, wrongly, when you think about influencer, I'm like, oh, that's just all digital. And here you are at the local level, they're bringing them to the store and then people are coming out to see this campaign. That's good.
And I'm glad you said that. And you pointed out a really strong point that I try to get across is that like influence was not developed with social media. Influence has been around since the beginning of time. And the most powerful influencers are often people in your lives. You're making decisions. And like, you know, if you're starting a wine label and you're, you know, why not give the wine to like local wine clerks? Where do you go when you're going to a party? You go to a wine store and you tell them about the host and who's the one that influenced your decision? Probably that local wine clerk. Like there are so many examples of like, we have to stop associating influence with social media content creation because it's going to lead us down the path of, and that's fine. Social media advertising is great, but it's just modern day advertising. They're two different things.
Interesting. And then, so that's like, yeah, like you said, like in the 80s, you had Michael Jackson, you had Cindy Crawford, there's celebrities promoting Pepsi. And then this is just the same movie, different age, different. It's the same movie repeating itself. But like you mentioned, it's influence. Now the hardest part though, cause you can easily, the reason we go to those folks is cause it provides that quick spike. Yeah. They're right there. We get that Kim Kardashian or whoever it might be. We pay them the money and it causes that spike. And long-term, it might not have that effect. And now the long-term approach, as you mentioned, you kind of find these folks, we'll go back to the blogger, the mommy, I'll call them mommy bloggers for the mommy product. It sounds like a lot of hard work finding these folks. Is that the case? I mean, is it hard work to kind of cultivate these relationships? First, find them. Then two, hey, do you want to be part of this ambassador program? Three, we're having a meeting. We might fly you in, we might not. We're going to bring you in. Like, yeah. Is it basically get down to hard work or are there kind of systems or tools out there we can use to help?
Yeah, there are. So it is. It's a lot of work if you think about it, but it's also less work and less time and less resources in the long run because it's like hiring an employee. It takes time, but you're in it for the long game, right? And yet we're trying to get this fast transactional approach from someone that's basically going to represent our brand. If you're going to do all this work to find somebody and bring them up to speed on your brand, why not make it long term? Why not make it a long-term relationship? So we complain, we have this this thought in business that we want to get things done on a timeline, 6 months, 9 months, whatever. But if we took a little more time up front and put in the infrastructure, it's going to pay for itself long-term because otherwise that's why we throw so much spaghetti at the wall. And let's say we've done like six campaigns and maybe one works. Then, but of that six campaigns, that was probably a lot more time and energy put into all the stuff that didn't work or didn't have the long-term effect. So yeah, it's more time up front, but it's got more bigger returns long-term.
That makes sense. And then for the busy executive, so I'm a vice president of a big brand, or I'm a small business, I'm the CEO doing everything. I'm the entrepreneur. I've identified it. I know influencer marketing is the key because it's word of mouth on digital steroids. It's word of mouth on steroids. It doesn't have to be digital, as we just mentioned.
Yeah.
But when we look at that, when we do that, do I have to hire someone as a consultant, a coach? Like who finds, I don't have the time to find these people. Who's the person that finds these people and kind of, I'll help foster a relationship, but it's kind of that day to day. How do we do that?
Yeah. I mean, if you're a corporate executive and you're a small business, those are probably, you're probably dealing with different, different duties and different resources and different time. But I think that even if you were to spend like half an hour a day, you know, developing relationships, it doesn't take that much time, to start opening different relationships, looking on LinkedIn. Like I have a colleague who said this a long time ago and it really stuck with me, which is he spends an hour every morning on LinkedIn. And just fostering those relationships. Now, yes, do you want to hire someone? But the problem is when we hire marketing right now, you need to be careful that your marketing department isn't siloed to social media advertising, because social media advertising is a tactic that, yes, it does work, but it's got to be part of a larger term strategy. So I think differentiating between advertising and marketing is probably one of the most important things you can do. So having a strong team that understands that is the most important thing. And that's really hard to find. And that's actually why I started the course, wrote the book, because when I had my company, that was part of the thing, was like, you know, how do we differentiate? And when I hired, I remember being frustrated by hiring an agency who all they did was use a tool or an algorithm to find like the, you know, the top 100 fitness influencers, the top whatever. And then they would send out the, you know, the template and it would just be advertising. And so that was what drove me into this, because I know the value. And I think we can all say the same thing, right? If you ask any business owner, how did your business grow when you started out? How did it grow? And like, how did you get your first client or patient or account or whatever? And then how did you get the second one? And oftentimes, almost like 9 times out of 10, it was because somebody would influence the behavior. Somebody told them about it, right? And yeah. So that's influencer marketing.
Well, it makes sense. It's that word of mouth that drives every business. That's huge. Is. All right. Now the fun part of this is that question I'd written down, is any good influencer fail stories?
Yes. And that's funny. I think Jamie just brought one up in the chat because she's taken my class. I'll use the one that she likes. One of the best fails that actually, you know, turned around and was a success was, you know, Kate Upton, the model. When she was in her superstardom, you know, she was at one point, she was everywhere. She was like back-to-back Sports Illustrated covers. Mm-hmm. She was the it girl. And so it seemed to make sense that Bobby Brown, the makeup cosmetics company, hired Kate to be the the face of Bobby Brown. And it failed miserably. And it seems obvious, right? But again, that's the obvious of like social media. You put it into an algorithm, okay, cosmetics model makes sense. Like, because what they failed to do was they failed to realize who their audience was and who her audience was. And so yes, Kate Upton was famous and she got a ton of engagement on the campaigns and all of the vanity metrics, the likes and the shares and all of this stuff, but she failed to do the one thing that was the most important, which was drive sales. And how did that happen? Because her audience was actually mostly straight men between the ages of 35 to 50.
There you go.
That's not exactly the audience that's buying cosmetics.
Right. And it might have indexed high. She's from Michigan. So it might have been high in Michigan. You don't know. But yeah, it didn't. And that's what you mentioned in the book, is that getting people's attention is only part of the influencer equation. Like that's what that means, specifically that example, right?
Yeah. So I think one way to really, I was trying to figure out, I love frameworks and structure. And that was, you know, how do you put structure around something that's kind of like marketing? And for me, influencer marketing was like, okay, well, how attention, we're always looking at attention and we're confusing attention and buzz and popularity with influence. But attention without trust is just noise. It's attention plus trust. Attention plus trust is influence.
I love that trust. I mean, you always say the big four, if you look out there with like Apple and Facebook and Amazon, and you look at those and you say, who's going to win? Because they're starting to compete in the same categories. It will come down to trust. So it holds true, I guess, in influencer marketing, which makes sense. And then other thing I liked in the book is you talk about, you know, don't be fooled by shiny objects. What does that mean?
Yeah. So shiny objects is like, you know, there's some, we're so overwhelmed with all the things that we should be, could be doing. And shiny objects is the ability, and actually you are probably the best expert on this, is the ability to focus, the ability to know your goal and not be distracted by all the different things that could be, because the reason I brought this up is because I see so many business owners or people doing marketing and they're like, oh, and but how about this person? And how about this person? And how about, but if you don't know your actual end goal, then all of a sudden you're just every day, you're just spinning wheels, getting all off track. But if you know, it's like, okay, a lot of my analogies come back to running. I guess it's a great analogy for life, for a lot of metaphor for life, for a lot of reasons. But, if you are training for a 10,000 meter race, then you're not going to go out and run junk miles. You're not going to like go out for like, a 20 mile long run. That's just like pounding the body and it's not getting you anywhere. No, you know that every single day you get up and you know exactly what you're going to run that day. You know exactly the miles, you know the pace, you know every single element of what you're going to do, and you're going to hit your times and you're going to cross the finish line pretty much ballpark within like a few seconds of where, you know, good or bad, it's still going to be within like a few seconds. Whereas if you don't, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to start running. I'm just going to start running. And then how do you know when you met your goal? You're all over the place. So, and maybe you're trying all these different workouts and whatever, but if you know, that's why it's important. Like number one is know your goal so finitely. And then when you create that strategy, know all the different things that are in that strategy, so you're not getting distracted by all the different possibilities.
No, that's great. It's like, what does success look like? It's important whatever side of the equation you're on. So if you're the agency that's helping maybe a company find and develop this program, or maybe you're a one-off coach, or maybe you're doing it direct as a small business, is you got to define what success looks like so everyone knows what that is. Because some person might be, for influencer marketing, going, oh, cool, we got 100,000 retweets. And maybe that was the goal. Maybe the goal was just brand awareness. And okay, so you're on the page, good. But if the goal was to sell product, then if one person's executing with a different success metric in mind, to your point, and I love sports analogies. It's funny, Jerry Seinfeld just did one where he's like, you know, I write every day because if I didn't, he goes, the analogy is if I showed up for my workout with my gym instructor, my coach, my fitness coach, and I go, how long are we here for? And he goes, I don't know. I'm like, I'm not working out. I'm not signing up for that. He's like, no, we're here for a half hour. So we're going to warm up. Then we're going to get these things. So that's awesome. I love it.
And you made a really good point about, you know, what defines success. And I talk about that a little bit, the difference between goal and objective. And I think that's where, as somebody that's a president of a company that's not doing the marketing, or as somebody that's marketing, trying to get the budget from the client or from the senior executive, it's really important to develop to know the difference between a goal and an objective. Because a goal, if you're a for-profit business, that goal is always to make money. And if your marketing department is saying, oh, but we're all about awareness and whatever, and you're trying to prove what happened on that campaign or that, you know, that strategy, and it doesn't translate into the bottom line, that's where marketing or advertising gets a bad rep.
As we look ahead, you mentioned in the book, again, it's The Influencer Code by Amanda Russell. You talk about the code of tomorrow. Can you explain that for the audience?
First of all, for people listening, what is the code? The code is just a framework for like how to go about navigating the world of influencer marketing. But it can be applied to business in general. How do you go about creating a strategy? And it's really three steps. It's three steps that they're very simple. And I always say simple does not mean easy, but they're simple. And it's, you know, what is the goal? It's number one, goal. Number two, observe. And number three, connect. And of tomorrow, the way that the book is written, I had in mind when I knew that writing a book, one of the reasons was everything changes so fast that by the time you publish a book, it's extinct. So how do you write a book that it doesn't matter if the platform ever changes tomorrow, if the world changes tomorrow, that it'll still be relevant. And I was very inspired. There was a book that was written in the 80s called The Brand Called You. And I loved how you could pick up that book today and it's still relevant. I mean, I think they did some updates on it, but why? Because it was a how to think book, not a how-to. And so these principles can be applied. So I don't go into detail about like certain platforms or algorithms or tools, because they're all going to change tomorrow. You have to know how to go approach something. You have to know where to start, how to create structure, how to, so you're not kind of, again, with the shiny objects and the all over the place thing. And that's one of the most, it's as an entrepreneur or as somebody that's working in any marketing, advertising, PR, journalism, you know, you see, it tends to get this stereotype of like frazzled, like there's always so much to do. There's not enough hours in a day and it's so crazy. And there's like, there seems to be no structure and it's chaotic, and it doesn't have to be that way. Every other industry manages to put structure around do structure and process, and it's the same thing. So the code is really like that structure, that process. It can be applied to your marathon training too. It's goal, observe, connect.
No, I love it. Goal, observe, connect.
Yes.
Goal, observe, connect. Okay, great. That's a good framework. I like that. What about yourself? So we're going to turn the tables and get deeper on you a little bit as an influencer and just your background. And what's the biggest fail you've had and what'd you learn from that? Everyone that I've talked to on the show always has like this moment that was a failure, let's say, or it was like a dark moment. Doesn't have to be necessarily a failure. It's like, oh man, I can't believe this happened to me. And then in retrospect, it's actually one of their greatest learning points.
I think it always is failure. It strips you of ego, and it allows you to do what you really want to go after. If you haven't failed on a big level, I think you're almost at a disadvantage because you kind of have this like, you know, everything has to look a certain way on paper. And I've had a lot of failure. I've been blessed because I've had so much failure in my life, I feel like. But with that, is what you do with it. And for me, I go back to, for me, the way that my running career ended, was a failure on so many levels. And at the time it felt like a death. And I acted like somebody close to me had died.
So you're training for the Olympics. And what was the event?
The 10,000 meters.
10,000 meters. So you're training, if I got this right, you're training for the Olympics, 10,000 meters. And then what happened?
It's a much longer story, but I ended up breaking my femur. So I've got rods I almost lost my leg. I've got rods that connect my leg. It broke right at the neck, back to my hip. And when that happened, I think, you know, it's easy 2020 to say, you know, hindsight, like, oh, and I got over it, whatever. But I went through a period of like identity crisis of like feeling sorry for yourself. Like because at that time I didn't just lose, you know, that Olympic dream.
How close was it to the Olympics when it happened?
I was about 3 months out.
Okay.
So, what I lost, but more than that, was that my support system, my U.S. visa, my health insurance, pretty much like my entire future just went blank. And I remember thinking, like, I didn't want to just go to that. That's never been my way. Was like, I don't even care to just go. I don't want to just, if I'm just going to go and show up, I want to break records. And then it was just different. And I remember it was my dad that had gave probably the best advice I've ever gotten my entire life. And I have used it again and again and again. And every time stuff gets hard, I use it. But my dad is kind of like a tough, like, if you're going to do this, like, even when I went to the US, he was like, if you're going to do this, like, it's going to be hard, and you're not going to call home crying. You're not going to call home because you're lonely, or you're on the road all over the year, or, you know, and you've chosen the toughest sport that there is. Like, that's everybody's punishment. So just so you know, like, you walked yourself into this, and if you're going to do it, you're going to get up every morning and you're going to be all in. And I believe that if you're going to do something, even now, today, even here with you now, like, if I've said, yes, I'm going to do something, then I am 100% going to do this. And I'm 100% with you. And I'm happy to be here, because even if I don't like doing something, it's going to suck more if I'm there and I'm like, oh, this sucks. And running was that way almost every day at 6 a.m. So that really helped. But what he said was, you know, you're acting like you're dead, and you're not. This is ridiculous. Like, you are, you know, 21 years old. You have all of this, like, you know, work ethic and dedication and energy that, you know, you can now give to something that's bigger than yourself, because nobody cares at the end of the day if you how many times have you stood on that podium? How many medals do you have? Who cares? Nobody cares. And now you have the ability to do something that touches other people. And so take all that energy. He's like, I don't care if you have to go like paint pictures for a while to figure it out, but do something. And then he said, and lastly, Amanda, call me back when you're not a victim, and hung up.
Oh, wow.
And that was, and that was kind of like a, oh shit.
Well, that's what you needed. Like yeah. My coach in college, Coach Izzo, said tough love's the only love. Meaning the person giving it doesn't want to give it. So that's the true love, that they're willing to sacrifice the relationship by telling you not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear at the time.
That's so true. And I operate by that, those rules. I don't have kids, but I see, you know, I teach so many. And so I see, you know, thousands of kids that are at that stage with their young adults where you can really see how they've been raised. And I used to think, oh, I'm so glad that I wasn't raised with like money and privilege, because I wouldn't have the hustle. I wouldn't have had, and I disagree with that now massively, because I have seen kids grow up in the greatest of privilege and be hustlers and know how to go after it and still have that hunger and that desire. And I've seen kids grow up in nothing and blame that. And then vice versa, you see the ones that have grown up in nothing that were like me and hustle and vice. So I don't think that I was mistaken to think that it was a product of, oh, it's because I didn't grow up with anything that I had it in me. I think it's a lot of it is a little bit of the way you are, but then I think that parenting or how, you know, it is a big part of that as well.
No, you're right. And then it's funny, we uncovered a story in the Focus Project where there's two twins and their dad's basically not your dad, who sounds awesome, but was abusive and just not a good dad. And the one kid turns out to be a rock star and the other kid turns out to be basically like the dad. And they ask him like, what was the cause of you having this rough life? And then he goes, my dad, I was a victim of my dad was like that. And then they asked the other kid, you know, why are you so successful? And the answer was the same. My dad.
Right.
I saw what my dad was like and I didn't want to be like that. I want to be the opposite. So it's how you use that circumstance. I love how you put that. And then also how your dad mentioned, it's not how many times you're on the podium, or like you could give someone a gold medal, like you could give something to someone, or you can put something into someone. And I think that's what you're doing with your classes. So let's walk through that a little bit. So you obviously are a professor at UCLA and University of Texas. You started the first ever influencer marketing class that also has been certified. How hard was that? Like some people out there listening, they want to become a professor or they want to teach a class on some new topic. Like walk us through how hard it was and then also how fulfilling it is today.
It was both. And I think anything that is fulfilling is because it's because it wasn't easy. And to give you an idea, when I got into it, they told me that it was not going to be possible. Or that I should, you know, focus on other things because it would probably take me 10 years to get a course accredited. And also I didn't have a PhD and I still don't. I have an MBA, but that in academia, it's not the same thing. I mean, luckily in business programs, MBAs are more valued, but still accreditation, course curriculum and stuff, usually that's the tenured track academia. I mean, it was a new world to me. And there was a lot more hoops and red tape than it made corporate America look like laissez-faire. I took it as a challenge that it's always been my way to be like, okay, now you told me no. So how do I go about doing this? And how do I go about kind of like, I don't want to say hacking the system because it sounds like I cheated, but yeah, hacking the system, like how, and again, I used influencer marketing 100% to do it. Meaning that I learned who I needed, who was my audience and who were the influential factors that are going to help me get this done. And so the first way that I got into doing it was I realized that I'm not a tenured professor and that will take me 10 years to do that. And that's not that bit. And I would do it if I wanted to, but that was not the reason I got into it. It's not the direction I personally want to go. So I found a tenured faculty that was, Harvard professor that was now at UCLA, who was very, very high respected. And basically I was like, I'll do all the work. You can put your name on that. Can you I will co-teach, but it will really be me doing all of the work. But like, you can champion this if you can help, you know, get this push through because you have the ability to do it. I will do all the work. And that was really how I, but that, you know, there's a lot of other moving parts in there that we worked on, but in a nutshell, it's like, okay, so who are those influencers for you? And for me, that's, it was him.
I love it. And then they told you 10 years and you said, hey, I'm going to make it happen. So you just made it happen. You didn't listen to it. So you went through there. And there is a ton of red tape. I can only imagine. So that's why it's so impressive.
As you know, yes. As you know.
It's so impressive that you've got that and you're rocking it and the students are benefiting from that. For our audience, is there a podcast? Is there a newsletter? Is there a quote? Is there something that, that you use kind of weekly that our audience should definitely try to digest?
Yeah, you know, I kind of am all over the map on listening to podcasts and speakers and all that stuff. And I there's not one specifically that I am really tuned into. There are certain books that I think are wonderful. But my thing is at the beginning of every single day, and I do it again at the end of every single day, and I've done it since I was 4 years old. And in the form of, I was raised Catholic and we were forced to pray. And so my mom said I had to pray for something. So and that prayer, became kind of like my thought process, which is, when I was young, it would be, I used to pray for, this is so ridiculous, but like that I wanted to get the award, whatever the award was at the end of the year, at school year, like that was, it was top student and top athlete. And so every day that's what I prayed for. I got up in the morning and all I thought about was that I was going to do everything that day to win that award in my school life. And then I would remind myself again at night when I prayed. And I do that every day now for what I want. So
don't leave us hanging. Did you get the award? Did you get the award? Did you win it?
You know, it's funny because the reason I started praying for that was because the first year, I think I was in kindergarten and I realized that I didn't even know about awards. And I realized there was one and I didn't win it. So then every single day for the rest of my life, I prayed. And yes, and I got the award, both of those awards every single year, all the way through elementary school and all the way through high school.
Nice. No, that's good. There's something to be said about that.
Yeah, but it's like that mind, because everything you do in your day then all of a sudden becomes, you have that at the back or front of your mind.
No, it's so true, just to have that daily ritual. So that's,
I'd love to hear who you listen to though on a daily, on a.
Oh yeah, no, I love Tim Ferriss. He's a Austinite now, so he's great. Yes. He's got a podcast, so go listen to Tim Ferriss. I read The Hustle, so that's always a go-to. Simon Sinek, he's a great guy. So I really digest his stuff. Gary V, he's a good dude as well. So he speaks from the heart, so he's great as well. So those are the ones I'm out there checking out.
Add yours.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you.
Yes, absolutely.
Then we always like to end with, is there any question I didn't ask, or is there any story that we didn't cover that is kind of open mic at the end here? Like, what's the one thing we didn't cover that would be beneficial for the audience, if there is anything?
I mean, there's always a lot of good stories and examples. I think that one question that I get a lot was, how did you make the transition? Or people come with a question, right? Of how, well, I've got this thing that I want to do, but how do I get there? Like, I don't have the right experience or the right profile. And I think experience is so overrated.
And this is the transition for anything, not just to becoming an influencer. This is the transition.
Yeah, for anything. At the end of the day, that's what we're after and whatever we do, influence. We all want to be influential in that category. Otherwise, you're average or you suck. And no one wants that. I think
a t-shirt, you're average or you suck.
that was probably a generalized, unacademic statement. But I think in terms of the transition, like, stop looking at it through the conventional lens of experience. Best things I've ever done. I had zero experience. I'm producing a documentary right now. I've never, a Netflix documentary. I've never done a documentary, and all of a sudden I'm doing a Netflix documentary. How do you get that? Because in order to get what you want, don't compete on experience. Compete on what you have. And that's often outside of the box. I needed to get, I had no corporate work experience. I'm trying to get a company to sponsor me in New York. I needed a sponsor. Not only did they have to hire me, they had to sponsor me, which means if you're not American, you know what that means. But if you are, it means that you have to prove that you are shoulders above every other American that's applied for that job. There's a reason they have to hire you over everybody else. And then they have to pay a lot of money to sponsor your visa. And I had no experience. So I used my running career. I had Nike was my sponsor. And so I had a lot of running shoes. And so I sent three of the firms that I focused on, a box, and I found out who the gatekeeper was, the influencer there. And I sent them each a box of my running shoes with this personal note about how I had all of this work ethic and dedication that I could give solely to their company because I couldn't run anymore. So I was willing to like basically marry their company and like basically 24 hours, 7 days a week, like there's nothing that can intimidate me. And I got the job and the offer and the sponsorship. And that was really my platform. And funny enough, I remember because the CEO, the global CEOs, it was Miller Brown Kantar Group, which is one of the biggest data science market research firms in the world, was a woman. And her name was, maybe she's listening to this. Now she will, because I'm going to send it to her. Her name was Marianne Pacco. And she was like this rock star of a human. And everybody, she was hardly ever in the New York office. But when she was, there was like an entourage and people would talk about her. And I just had like from very far, I just had this like this admiration. Like she was this woman, this like beautiful woman that just like commanded all of this everything, this palace. And dreams do come true. When my book launched, and we did a recorded book launch, she watched the whole thing, and at the end, she reached out to me and was like, I remember. And I'm so happy to have had a part in that journey. But it was just so funny how that came. But she remembered me because I was like, how did you even know? She goes, because you were the girl with the shoes, like the box shoes.
The shoes, there you go. I mean, you made it, what a grit, grind, hustle that it stood out, that you sent the shoes. I mean, no one's getting shoes.
And especially used running shoes. I mean,
the used part, even better.
Oh yeah. I wasn't buying them new shoes. I was giving them shoes that I had worn. And you're a master at FIKE. Creating these opportunities. Cause I know, you spoke, I'll finish this off, but you spoke in our class and students were just blown away. And a couple of them reached out and, you know, asked you some hard questions. And I was really impressed with some of the answers that you gave them and like some tangible, like actionable examples versus just, you know, like try hard and, you know, think about, you know, things. I was really impressed. So.
No, it's very kind of, you know, it's always an honor to be in front of the students, especially your class. So thanks for having me come in there. And it's been an honor to have you here today. And so thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know the book launch is going quite well. It reached number one on Amazon. It's called The Influencer Code. Like Amanda just went over, we've always wanted that influence. It's always been important, that word of mouth. And it's always important to have that tribe of followers for whatever product, service, or nonprofit that we're doing. So I know the audience is going to benefit hugely today from all your insights. So thank you so much for joining us here today, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
So thanks again for listening to today's Super You podcast. Again, it's a podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. And if you want to pay it forward, make sure you go post a review for the Super You podcast, because what that will do, it'll allow others that aren't familiar with our podcast to discover it. And hopefully that allows them to unlock and unleash their inner superpower. So that's it for today's show. I'm your host, Equal Man, reminding all of us, it's not what we take from the world, it is what we leave behind.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Super, 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 super,
super you.